certainly a great pleasure for me to introduce Dr. Mahendra Singhal to you this evening. I first met him when attending a Hindu awareness seminar he was conducting at the Midwest School of Mission in Chicago. And you read the information about him in the convocation brochure that came out, and so I won't repeat some of those things. He is a convert to the Christian faith from Hinduism, and so he knows Hinduism from the inside out. Ostracized from his family, who still live in India, parents and brothers, sisters, knows what that's like. He's especially devoted to reaching people in Hinduism with the gospel of Christ. I'd like to mention that this past July, he was invited to meet with leading international evangelists in Hawaii to discuss and help them devise strategies for reaching Hindus in the United States. Even more recently, I think the 15th and 16th of September, he was in southern France. Due to the spreading influence of the New Age movement there, he was presenting a seminar to assist missionaries and pastors in encounter with the New Age movement in that country. With about 1/7 of the world's population being adherents of Hinduism and or related cults which espouse the tenets of Hinduism, and those cults everywhere expanding their efforts, we are very much aware of how timely it is to have Dr. Singhal with us this evening and again tomorrow. And we certainly welcome him and are pleased that he's able to work us into his schedule. And so, being all present and gathered here, as Cornelia said, to hear him, that's what we'll do. So, Dr. Singhal.
Thank you very much for the privilege of asking me to be here tonight. Incidentally, this is my first trip to St. Louis, and of course, thereby, the first one to this seminary. But I've enjoyed my time here so far, having arrived only this afternoon, and I'm looking forward to what Professor Kapiski has called the grand tour of the seminary tomorrow. And I'm sure it's going to be a grand tour. Incidentally, this building here reminds me of Oxford University in England, where I had the privilege of studying philosophy for a couple of years. And this really, the quad that you have here is very, very reminiscent of my days at Oxford University. So I almost felt homesick for my old alma mater, if you know what I mean. Before I get into the New Age movement and discuss a few pertinent facts about the movement, I think it's only appropriate that I share with you just a couple of things about my background to at least make you aware of why I am concerned about this movement. Being born in a Hindu family, and as a child, I was a very questioning person. So much so that my father would get extremely unhappy with me at some of the questions I would raise. And in some cases, I even got some beatings because I raised some difficult questions for which he didn't have an answer and he didn't want to look for an answer. And yet, as it were, I was hired to teach in a Christian school in India. And this school was run by 18 different denominations from this country, including the Lutherans. And I was asked to teach there primarily because my background is mathematics, and they needed a mathematics instructor, not that because I was a Christian. And in that school, I heard about Jesus Christ almost for the first time in my life. The principal of the school was an Australian missionary, and he was also a mathematician, and he and I got along very well because we loved the same subject, and also because he was deeply interested in sharing Jesus Christ with me. And it took me 3 years to analyze and evaluate the claims of Christ, compare them against what Hinduism had taught me all my life, and to determine for myself that the claims of Christ were consistent and totally acceptable. And so it was not an emotional decision. It was not one of those decisions that you see on television where people walk down the aisles and become Christians. I'm not disputing the validity of those experiences, but I'm saying it didn't happen that way to me. Actually, I've come to the point of saying that the salvation in itself is not an experience, it's a process, which sometimes terminates in an experience. And so, after that long search, I became a Christian, and of course, as I was sharing at the dinner table, I continued to be a Christian with a very definite Hindu mindset. Because you see, people didn't tell me that if you are going to be a Christian, and an active Christian at that, you need to somehow redefine your parameters of thinking. Nobody shared that perspective with me. So I was a Christian in the sense that I was espousing the right kind of language, but I was relating it to a different frame of reference. And one of the things that happened immediately after I became Christian is that my parents got very unhappy with me, and I was thrown out of the family. I was actually disowned. And my family is a fairly wealthy family of India, actually one of the top wealthy families of India. I could have inherited a great fortune so far as this world's goods are concerned if I had continued to be with my family. And so my father, of course, immediately cut me out of the family, which is all right, but they didn't stop with that. My uncle tried to poison me and get rid of me somehow. And in order to avoid all that, I decided, well, I better go to the haven of Christians, to the United States of America, and an opportunity opened up, and I came out to the States, of all the places, to South Dakota. God is a great joker, right? No, I'm not being irreverent, please, don't get mad at me now. But South Dakota was something totally different. I can tell you all kinds of stories about South Dakota, but I wouldn't go into that. But you see, my struggles continued with believing one way and also believing another way at the same time. There were two belief systems coexisting at the same time in my mind. And it took me a long time to sort that out. And as a matter of fact, it was only a few years ago that I finally discovered that I was a functioning Christian with a Hindu mindset. And after talking to lots of Christians in this country, I've also seen many, many Christians with a non-Christian mindset. And so, the Lord began to, in a sense, deal with me and correct that. And after I was able to, I wouldn't say completely purge myself of the old frame of reference, but as far as one can, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I believe that I'm beginning to see things in a totally different perspective. And when that began to happen, one of the concerns that came to me, and this happened about 2 years ago, is that I wanted to take the gospel to educated and professional Hindus. I don't know if you know this or not, there are about 500,000 Hindus in this country. I'm sorry, 500,000 Hindus who are employed in this country, not 500,000 Hindu families. The total number is about 1 million people, if you count the wives and children. Most of them are fairly educated. As a matter of fact, in a survey published in the Chicago Tribune recently, of all the Asians in America, Indians are topping the list financially, academically, and professionally. I'm sorry to say this, Professor, but we are ahead of the Koreans. I had to say that because, you wouldn't understand, that's a private thing between him and I. But we are really ahead of the other Asian races in this country. And yet, the sad thing to me is that there is not any group, and it doesn't matter what name you give it or what label you ascribe, there is not single mainline denomination that is even thinking of reaching Hindus with the gospel. And then when I examined this situation farther, even into the country of India, I discovered that the same is true even there. Efforts are being made to take the gospel to people who are perhaps not well educated, who are not well placed in life, and they are the ones who come to evangelical crusades. They are the ones that hear about Jesus Christ, but no effort is being directed to reach what I would call, without being a social snob, the upper classes of society. Now, in India and among Hindus, the way the system works is always a top-down process. If we could reach the upper classes with the gospel, the influence alone would filter down to the ranks. And unfortunately, if you only reach the lower levels of society, which is not wrong, everybody needs to hear the gospel, and I believe in that firmly, the influence does not move up. And therefore, even after 200 years of missionary endeavors in India, only 3% of the people are Christians, 0.5% are active Christians, and among those 0.5%, according to my data, none is from the upper classes of Hindu. And that is a shameful fact, and I am willing, as I was telling Professor Kapiski at dinner, I teach mathematics at the University of Wisconsin right now. My wife and I, we run a Christian school, and I'm heavily involved in both these assignments. But I'm willing, if God would raise a group of people to stand with me and behind me, to devote myself entirely to take the gospel to the Hindus. I have two reasons for that. Number one, I believe I talk the same language as those people that I want to take the gospel to. I have not met a single Indian Christian who has that kind of a background. I'm not saying they don't exist, but I haven't met them. And number two, I have had some tremendous successes in my efforts to take the gospel to the Hindus. And I've seen some miraculous conversions in some of the meetings I've been privileged to have. And so, if I may, with that brief introduction, I would like to ask, if I may, and I hope I have permission to say this, if you think about this and if you believe in prayer, and I hope you do if you attend a seminary, unless, of course, this is considered a medieval thing. I don't know what Concordia believes. I really don't know. I'll find out, but I don't know at this point. But I hope you believe in prayer, at least as one Christian to another. Some of you are shaking your heads both ways. I don't know which way to interpret that. Which is all right. See, if you ever go to India, that's how we shake our heads. It means yes and no both. So we leave the questioner guessing as to what we mean. And perhaps you picked that up from Indian friends. I would like to ask for your prayers for this ministry, and I would like to pray myself that God will give you a burden for this ministry. I honestly believe that even though you are not perhaps on the battlefield yourself, the work on the battlefield cannot move unless there's a force standing behind those who are on the battlefield. And the reason I'm here tonight is not just to talk about the New Age movement, I'm also here to appeal to the seminary people, faculty, students, staff, if the Lord would put the burden on you to perhaps become that kind of a force in this movement. What is the New Age movement? Now, the time that we have, well, I'll try to give you some of the basic premises of the New Age movement. I'm sure you've all heard about the New Age movement. First of all, I want us to imagine an endeavor by different groups who are not interconnected. And these separate groups sprang up on their own in different parts of this country and different parts of the world. But the amazing thing that was discovered is that there were some factors in common among these groups. So last January, January of 87, a very concerted effort was made to link all these groups and to see if some kind of a network could be established. And that networking is taking place right now with the centers in Denver, Colorado, and Seattle, Washington. The Seattle, Washington headquarters are in an Episcopalian church, and the minister of that church is one of the spokesmen for the New Age movement for this nation. And so actually the Denver, Colorado group is not as strong, even though it's fairly well known, as the Seattle, Washington group is. And this man's attempt is to link up all these different groups that are espousing the same philosophy and somehow seeking a new approach. The groups began in different parts of the world as saying what has been happening is not satisfactory, is not achieving what it was set out to achieve. It's not doing anything for the mere man, and we need to do something to somehow make man a better person. And so different approaches were designed to somehow lift the cause of mere man. Self-improvement, exaltation of human potential. And as we group these different movements, we discover these common elements, what I like to call the premises of the New Age movement. The first premise of all these groups, and I'm going to put it very simply, if I may, all these groups deny the existence of a personal God. They don't believe that there is a God extrinsic to man. That means there is no God outside of man. Now please understand this. You and I as Christians believe in a God who is separate from man. Schaeffer calls it God who is there, as opposed to God who is not there. The New Age movers, the New Age scholars, deny the existence of a God who is outside. They believe that God is intrinsic to man. That means God is actually part of the man. The difficulty is that we are so embroiled in the world in which we live, and we are so fooled by this world and the glamour and the glitter of this world, that we don't take the time to examine ourselves and seek this God within ourselves. And therefore, we continue to reach out hoping we'll find a God out there. Now, these people believe that first of all, we must cancel the notion that there is a personal God outside of man and restore the idea And they use the word restore the idea that God is actually present in every person. And therefore, in order for man to reach his potential, what we need to train him to do is to help him to reach God consciousness within himself. And so each of these groups, whether you talk of Shirley MacLaine, or you talk of the Krishna Consciousness Society, or even if you talk of this group, I was amazed to see an Akankar group right outside here. Any of these groups, they are all talking of raising human potential. And when they talk of raising human potential, what they are really talking about is that by looking inward, by looking inside of ourselves, we will ultimately discover that God was already there. And final words would be, God is I, or God is me. I am God, period. And when that happens, you have reached the highest level of human consciousness. Now, please understand that there are various forms of doing this. As I mentioned to the faculty this afternoon, there's a group in California that believes that we can reach this level of consciousness when we can communicate with plants. This may sound like an amusing thing for you, but it really is true. What they suggest is that we should go and stand in front of the plants and take our hands out and move our feet so that we somehow resemble the branches of a tree and stand immobile before a plant. In other words, behave like a plant to a plant. And if we do it long enough with our concentration on the plant, so that the plant is not intimidated by a presence and accepts us as one other plant in that area. When that begins to happen, you're not focusing on the plant per se, you're going to start focusing on yourself because you're not projecting your inner consciousness on the plant. And in that process, you don't become a tree, you begin to find that God within yourself. That sounds extremely infantile to me, but but believe me, there are thousands who are attracted by this philosophy. And if you go down to that commune, you will see people in different postures standing almost like a statue in front of different plants, communicating with nature. In that, they hope to find themselves. I have a feeling they are going to find that the limbs have gone extremely stiff because of bad circulation of blood. But is that kind of thing that is going and attracting people? There's a group that is talking about communication with animals. And they say that we cannot really find ourselves unless we learn to talk to dogs. I have a dog in my house, and I'd love to have one of these new agers come and talk to this dog and put some sense into that stupid stupid animal, because he has decided to use my office for all his cruddy workmanship. And I can't shake that notion out of him, her actually, that my office is to be left alone. And when I read that, I thought, well, that might be a very wonderful thing to do, to communicate to a dog, we call her Snowy, and say to Snowy, I love you, and I'm like you. No, I'm not like her, and please stop using my area as a bathroom. The amazing thing is that there are lots of people, I'm serious, lots of people who are being swayed by the philosophies of these groups. There are people who are seeking planetary consciousness. Now, the planetary consciousness people basically sit on a nice clear night and gaze at the planets. They don't do any work. They sit there And they hope that by doing that, when they actually can internalize the planets, they will not only be able to communicate with the planets, they will discover this God within themselves. And one man who is a planetary consciousness spokesman, I met him on a plane once, and I said, "I have an answer for you, my friend." He said, "What's that?" I said, "If you guys want to really look at the planets and seek that consciousness," I said, "why don't you ask the government to put you on one of these planetary planes and send you there? And you may all stay there so far as I'm concerned. You won't have to stare at those planets, you'll be there." Well, that's what they're doing. All right, number two. They also believe, and they advocate, that one of these days, nobody tells you when, but one of these days, a great superhuman world teacher is going to come. They call him the New Age Messiah. He's going to arrive. Now that really is an extension of human aspiration, which goes back to all time history, where people have always had the urge to see things change. And one of the ways they felt things were going to change is when somebody arrives on the scene and is the change master. This person, this superhuman world teacher, when he comes, he'll have great wisdom and will have great psychic powers. Now, some people who analyze New Age movement believe that the New Age people are talking about Antichrist in this. I'm not so sure of that, because I think some of the books that I've read on this are overdrawing their conclusions in some of these things. There is a man, however, in England whose name is Maitreya, and he claims, he's one of the New Age movement people, he claims that he is the Messiah who is to come. He's right now in London. And this man, in the July of 1977, the man called Maitreya, who also calls himself the Christ, descended from his ancient retreat in the Himalayas and took up residence in the Asian community of East London. He lives and works as an ordinary modern man concerned with modern problems. The reason for his not immediately appearing and working openly as the Christ is that humanity must choose its future of its own free will. When we have, now this is a newsletter from the New Age movement people, when we have sufficiently demonstrated our readiness to accept his presence among us and our willingness to rebuild our world along more just and compassionate lines, then he, that is Maitreya, will come forward to lead us into a new era of unprecedented opportunity and achievement. He knows the heart of humanity is sound, but we have already made the right choices and call for his help, and thus his imminent emergence into full public view is assured. So this guy is going to leave London and take over the leadership of the movement at the time, according to this New Age paper, when the world is ready for him. Number four, they all believe in the synthesis of all religions. They believe that all religions are saying the same thing. They don't see too much difference between the Hindu pantheism and Christian monotheism. They don't see the difference between the claims of Jesus Christ on one hand and no claims of any gods in Hindu philosophy. They don't see any difference between the reincarnation and karmic theory of Hinduism and the idea of sin in the Christian theology. They say we can all be one because ultimately each one of us within himself or herself will discover God, who is a part of every human person. So the clarion call is, "Come, let us be one." The boost to the New Age movement came when some of the leading personalities of our times endorsed the movements. I don't know if you've heard of Shirley MacLaine's seminars when she sits and talks about her previous lives. She said that at one time she was a queen of Egypt. At one time she was a Roman governor. And all those things, and people sit there and believe that what she's saying is exactly what happened. Some movie stars have jumped into the scene. I don't know if you saw this or not, but Richard Greer, one of the actors of Hollywood, believes that he was a Tibetan Lama in his previous birth. And so he has now become a great friend of the Dalai Lama. He even left the shooting of a film to greet the Dalai Lama, who happens to be visiting the United States right now. Now the funny thing is, the Dalai Lama himself does not claim to be a Dalai Lama in his previous birth. But Richard Greer, I'm sure you've all heard of Richard Greer, the man who acted in a couple of movies, believes that he was a Lama or perhaps a Dalai Lama in his previous birth, which of course is very poor Tibetan teaching, because the Tibetans believe that if you are a Dalai Lama, you cannot be anything but a Tibetan in your next birth. So, but apparently Mr. Greer doesn't quite know that. Maybe he is a Tibetan, but we just don't know that. The next point that they all make is that the God that they are advocating includes everyone. And they will exclude only those. Now that's a very interesting point that they make. They'll exclude only those who believe in Jesus Christ. So if you want to join one of these communes and you say that you believe exclusively in Jesus Christ, not in Jesus Christ and, but only in Jesus Christ, then you will not be welcome in those groups. But if you say that you believe in Krishna, that's all right, you can join that group. You believe in Muhammad, that's okay. You believe in Buddha, that's okay. You believe in Gandhi, that's okay. You believe in no one, that's okay. But if you believe just and only in Jesus Christ, then you're not welcome by these groups. Why are people following these groups? They are following these groups because the advertising, the commercialism, and the attraction for something new is overpowering in our land. And the promise that we can achieve our own salvation. We can deliver ourselves. These groups are promising that man is himself an evolving God, and that the greatest love of all is self-love. And so it's self-fulfillment, self-realization. And people are rushing after this because they all want to achieve something. And then comes in the twist, because they say if you don't achieve it in this life, well, you got the next life to continue the process. So it's not the end of the cycle. What do these words mean according to New Age people? God is not a person according to New Age people. God is an impersonal energy force. Christ is one of the reincarnations, one of many. What does born again mean? When a person lets go and allows his higher self to take over. Heaven and hell, they don't exist. Is Jesus coming back the second time? No, of course not. But what does second coming mean? When one reaches God consciousness within himself. These are some of the basic premises of these groups who are now being interlinked and are called by the general term New Age movement. The New Age movement is not impossible to describe, it's very difficult. It's a complex sociological phenomenon, not unlike the proverbial elephant discovered independently by three blind men. One came upon his leg and described him as a tree. Another got hold of his trunk and compared him to a hose. The third upon his tail and insisted that it was a rope. Things that may be true about parts of the New Age movement are not necessarily true of the whole. Is it a threat? Very definitely. The threat is, as I see it, is that it takes away the idea of absolute right and wrong, makes all actions relative. The creed is, if it feels good, do it. Number two, it destroys the Christian concept of God and makes every man become a god, and therefore there would be no need of receiving Christ into a person's life. I don't have time to go into the details of this, but I'll be happy, we have about 5 more minutes, to answer any questions that you may have. Yes, sir, at the back. Well, could you tell me what you have there?
I have the first premise that they all agree to deny the existence of the individual personal God, the second is the great superhuman Messiah is coming, and the fourth premise...
No, no. The second one was they exalt the human potential.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, very. I didn't want to touch on that. In up to the end of last year, it was very subtle. They were not directly challenging Christianity. But now, as time moves on and they are gathering momentum, I think you're going to see more and more of that. And I'm seeing that because I get literature from Seattle, Washington, because of my interest in the field, and the proclamations that are being made by this man who is, in a sense, trying to network the whole thing, are extremely critical and extremely strong against Christianity, especially the organized Christian church. You're right. That is the trend that I'm seeing coming. Yes, sir? I'm sorry. Of course, at this point, you know, is a brand new ball game, so they are all excited. The individual groups can continue to exist as individual groups. They are all saying, let us just join hands. We are not coming under the same umbrella. So at this point, that concept of unity is more like an affirmation of each other. They are all united in the cause, not in the organization as such. I have a feeling that when that comes to organizational level, I think we are going to see those things. But at this point, of course, it's simply a unity of purpose. Yes, sir.
How do they reconcile excluding those who believe that Jesus Christ is Lord from their idea of Christianity or religion?
Because if you believe in Christ alone, you are saying there is no God but Jesus. In the synthesis, or in the synthetic approach, you're going to accept all as equal gods. Now, if you're truly a Christian, and I'm using the word Christian in the biblical sense of the term, then you'll have to take a position, either Christ or no one. And therefore, it becomes an exclusive form of religion, which is not acceptable as a synthetic view. And because of that inconsistency, I think they're trying to play it safe and saying, we don't want that trouble within our circles. So if you believe only in Christ, you will not accept Krishna as an equal God. Yes?
I've heard that the very humans oversimplified our guess, but simplified into the statement that in its various parts and forms is nothing more than a human variation on what Hinduism teaches.
That is exactly right. There are definitely very strong overtones of Hinduism in this movement. But the overtones have been rephrased to appeal to the Western mind. See, what is happening is, there's a group in Chicago, now this might alarm some of you, called Hinduization of America. And this group is doing everything they can to bring Hindu philosophy to this country. And apparently they have found a very good reception to Hindu philosophy in this country. And they are promoters from within of the New Age movement. Very definitely. I mean, you're absolutely right. There isn't that much of Christian teaching in the New Age movement as there is Hindu teaching. But they are using some Christian terminology not to leave the so-called Christians out. Yes, sir. No, you see, then he didn't you read the following his follow-up statement when he said the world was not ready for him yet. And people believe that, and that's why this New Age paper that I read from strongly believes that when the world is ready, when justice has been restored and all the inequalities have been destroyed, when man is respected and along with the animal and the plant, all creation is equally respected, then this guy will suddenly appear, and he is the coming Messiah. I'm sorry? Yeah, I agree with that argument. I agree completely. But he doesn't see it that way. But you see, that kind of a thing somehow appeals to people. There is a guru from India. Yeah, you wouldn't believe how much money people have poured into this guru. You know, he's the silent one. He doesn't speak a word. And people rushing into his ashram, pouring the money into him, and the guy just stands there and never says a word. I'm serious. I have a feeling he doesn't say a word because either he can't speak or he doesn't know what to say. But people... But I'm sorry, there are people... And this guy has his headquarters now in Philadelphia. And people are going there and they're so impressed that here is a guru who doesn't say a thing. Now, if that is not taking total leave of your senses, I don't know what is. But they are Americans with money. And they're going there talking, not talking, worshipping this guy who doesn't speak. But they call him the silent one. I'd like to meet this guy and hit him on the head and see if he even says, ouch. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I didn't follow the letter part. Well, rebirthing in that sense, yes, they do that, but rebirthing they do is not in the sense of experiencing their birth now, but going back to previous births. Yes, they would accept Islam as monotheistic, yes, and Judaism too. You're right. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes, sir.
If we all have a part of God within each of us, what is the purpose of this new Messiah?
He would basically be a man of tremendous psychic powers and would unify all the existing groups and rule forever. And we'll recognize him as the Messiah because we would have by then reached in ourselves God consciousness. At this point, we don't recognize him as that God because we haven't reached that state of God consciousness. Yes, sir. Well, you mean somebody who's involved with the New Age movement?
Right.
Okay. My first question always is, if we could reach God consciousness in and by ourselves, I would like to meet a person who has actually achieved that. Show me one person. Hindus have practiced this for the past 5,000 years. There should be at least one person who can tell me that he reached that God consciousness. According to all my studies, and I've spent a great deal of time studying Hindu books, I haven't come across anyone who has actually said, I reached that stage. And my question then is, if that has not happened in the past 5,000 years, how do I know it will happen in my lifetime? But I can validate the claims of Jesus Christ through the tongues, writings, and documented experiences of thousands of people. My argument ends after that. Now, if you still want to believe a lie and not come to grips with the truth, that is entirely your privilege. But I have at least exposed you to the difference. I can't make a believer of anyone. You see, my approach in evangelism on one-to-one is, I want you to leave thinking that maybe you need to re-examine what you have begun to believe. And if I can do that, I believe I have succeeded in my mission. Do I answer your question, sir? Nirvana is Buddhism, moksha is Hindu. But same concept. No, they say, but how do I validate that? Well, that's my problem. You see, if they reached moksha, that means they were delivered from the cycle of birth and death. That's what it means. Okay? They became one with the Supreme God, who is not defined, but somehow they reached that undefined God, became part of that God. All right? Now, that actually happened to someone. There's no empirical evidence for that. So how do I cope with that? It's like someone saying that when he died, he went to heaven. All right, I believe that, but there is no fact to substantiate that claim. And incidentally, you don't become a Christian just to go to heaven. Well, that's totally incidental to the whole theology. Yes, sir. Yes, you can write. Yeah. The top 200 of the Fortune 500 companies right now have at least some program of self-improvement of the employees. And most of those programs are based on the New Age philosophy. I've written to all those 200 companies, now I haven't had any response to it, asking for equal time at my cost. But they, of course, have not given that to me yet. Because I'm willing to go and expose the myth that is being perpetuated at great expense to the companies. But you are absolutely right, the big corporations are doing that. Minneapolis has become a very big center for these kind of programs, training programs for big executives. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. And they are not using the same terminology anymore. They are using different words. And if you don't know, then you can be caught into a situation that you think is totally, as you say, innocuous, but is not. Is all loaded with concepts that have been borrowed from Hindu philosophy. You're absolutely right. Howell Bell in Minneapolis has just launched a very big, very ambitious program, not only to train its own employees, but to make that training available to other corporations also.
If somebody ever reached God consciousness, would they, in their mind of New Age movement, would they become immortal? Or would they be reincarnated as an
Okay, see what would happen. Okay, what they're talking about is a little out of what I was going to talk about, but let's say you're sitting here, and at this point you're conscious of everyone in the room, of the light here, the physical dimensions of the room, and the colors and all that. All right, then what you need to do, you raise your thinking level so that your focus, your entire focus, is on just one aspect of the room. Okay, let's just say the lights. At that level, what you're going to be doing is that you're going to become so light conscious that the rest of this area would disappear. Okay. Now, if you can continue to elevate yourself and you could reach that God consciousness level, then what would happen is that you will even see yourself not as you see yourself now, but through a different set of eyes, which we would say, the New Age person would say, which are God's eyes. And everything around you would take a totally different color, because you'll not be seeing actually with your own eyes, but with God's eyes. But the problem is, your own eyes will also function at the same time. You can never shut out your human consciousness. So you'll actually exist or be in two consciousness levels at the same time. The God consciousness, that means you're looking at yourself through someone else's eyes, and you're seeing yourself through your own eyes. And at that point, you'll suddenly begin to realize what's happening to you. And the idea is that when that consciousness becomes the major focus of your attention, you would be so fed up with your own self that you're either going to kill yourself or would want to be in that God consciousness stage, which would be, of course, totally impractical. And if you continue to live, you will live between two dimensions at the same time. In other words, you will have a break in your personality. But they don't talk about that. They say you would have a new appreciation of yourself. That's what they say. It's almost like using drugs. And when you're high on drugs, you know you have two senses going at the same time. Or sometimes three, or sometimes four, depends on the drugs. And it can actually drive you insane when that happens. My question always is, let's say we do reach the stage of God consciousness, but what happens if I find there is no God there? Then what? So you're constantly in a kind of a drugged out situation with nothing to hold on to. Then what? Do I answer your question, sir? Nobody knows, because nobody has reached that. That's right. Yeah. Okay. No, nobody has reached that. Our time is running out, but I'll take one more question, then we'll stop. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes. 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 Yes, I do, but that's a much longer topic. And I'd rather beg your indulgence and not take that up, because our time really has run out. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
We certainly thank you and appreciate your sharing this with us. Look forward to tomorrow as well. I mentioned to the faculty this afternoon in the forum that these things aren't, you know, far away, because I hail from very near Shawano, Wisconsin, and St. James, being at one time the largest congregation in Synod, well, they now have a guru and a sort of Indian commune and everything just outside the Shawano city limits. And the adherents of that guru and followers and the like have been found within this county, which at one time was 96% Lutheran. So continuing to preach and teach the truth while identifying error and whatever will be a continued challenge for you, and a growing challenge in your ministries, and we appreciate the awareness and the help that Dr. Stengel brought us this evening. Now, those of you who don't have anything to study, enjoy the punch, the cookies, the fellowship, and we'll just break it off here. And thank you so much for coming.